Hi, everybody. This is Tyler, and I think I'm going to switch this podcast back to being called the Lonely Painter Podcast. It used to be the Lenny and Tyler Show. Before that, it was the Lonely Painter, and then before that, it was the Montana Gallery Podcast. And I just have lately been getting back into psychoanalytic theory, and back when I called it the Lonely Painter Podcast, part of the reason for that was because I felt like it touched on what is a pretty fundamental core tenant concept within Lacanian psychoanalytic theory, which is this notion of lack. And so loneliness or aloneness is kind of sort of another way of getting at this idea. And sort of avowing one's lack or aloneness was kind of that's kind of the idea behind calling it the Lonely Painter Podcast. So I really love the work of Mari Rudy, and I've been reading her books. I've got three or four of her books, and one's called The Case for Falling in Love. That's probably the easiest, most approachable book of hers. That was I think the first book that I read by her. It's just amazing. It's kind of an intervention into the self-help section of Barnes and Noble that has to do with romance and kind of her critique of an idea that guys are one way and girls are another, and that you're supposed to play certain games and blah blah blah. She does a really good job of critiquing that kind of men are from Mars, women are from men are from Mars, women are from Venus kind of essentialism. So that's The Case for Falling in Love. Her book, Penis Envy and Other Bad Feelings, is the book that I've probably spent the most time with recently. And I don't think I've mentioned this yet. So I actually emailed Mari a couple days ago to see if I could interview her sometime. And she emailed back the next day and said, yeah, I'm game. And so all of a sudden I'm like, oh crap. I really need to make sure that I, grasp, her line of thinking, her work, as well as possible before going into that interview. And so I'm kind of going back over her books again, and will be in the next couple weeks. And I plan to, my friend Pete Tolton read this book with me, and we're going to sometime in the next, couple weeks also record just a conversation. So I thought, okay, I want to try to, between now and my interview with Mari, try to, that was some snow falling off my car. I'm parked up on top of the rims. So between now and my conversation with Mari, I would like to try to create some short episodes that cover some of the concepts that I think I grasp that I find in her work, and in psychoanalytic theory in general. Okay, so maybe the first one, I've already kind of touched on it briefly, is this concept of lack. And if you ever look up any interviews with Mari Rudy, which I highly recommend, there's one by a guy named Sean Carroll and the Mindscape podcast that is it's a really, really good interview. In these interviews, she typically wants to, and in her books too, she always kind of makes this distinction. She wants to distinguish between two different kinds of lack that we as humans experience. The first kind of lack would be maybe what we could call contingent or circumstantial. It's it has to do with the different things that happen to us as we live our lives that can create, that can be kind of like traumas, that can create like pain and unease in the body and in the psyche. So something traumatic happens to you, that's one form of lack in this contingent way. Another maybe contingent form of lack would be, even be our gender, the gender that we're born into, the biological gender that we're born into, and the color of our skin, and how the society around us relates to those contingent things about us, that the way that that society relates to the those parts of us is also potentially contingent itself. And so because of that, it actually does allow for possibility for us to move towards justice for the oppressed. Okay, so that's maybe the first form of lack. But then she always wants to distinguish that form of lack from what would be more of maybe what we would call an ontological form of lack, or something existential, something inherent to the human condition or the human predicament. Now, that form of lack it's the same, it's touching on the same area that people like Jean-Paul Sartre was trying to get at with his interest in the concept of nothingness, and that if I understand like being in nothingness, like there's a sense in which we are the nothing around which we put beings being things like even our names, our symbolic identification. So like that would include for me, like I'm an artist, or I'm male, or I have dark hair and white skin and blah, blah, blah. I'm a CrossFitter. Those are the things, the signifiers. It's also, you know, the things that I like. I like Signature Select pepperoni pizza, and I like beer, and I like psychoanalytic theory. All of those are forms of beings that I place around the nothingness that is me. And it's for Sartre, we act in bad faith when we over-identify with one of those things. He talks about a waiter who thinks he's a waiter. Sometimes you kind of, I think I've been around, or maybe I've been this, like an artist who thinks he's an artist. Maybe you kind of know what I'm talking about. Okay, so that would be another way of sort of looking at this this second form of lack, the nothingness, the inherent ontological lack within that we feel. It's also kind of related to that just general sense of ennui, of restlessness. And so a lot of it's like, why do we seem to have that even when we get everything that we thought we wanted? Why does that persist? And of course, lots of different ideologies, religions, mythologies give their reason for that. You know, original sin in Christianity might be the way of sort of getting at this not at oneness within the self. I think I'm not super familiar with Buddhism, but I think it also kind of talks about an idea of like we're kind of not, we're out of joint with ourselves in some sense. But in Lacanian psychoanalytic theory, the reason for why we have this inherent ontological lack, the mythology behind that that Lacan gives is really interesting. And it basically has to do with the way in which we are interpolated into our societies through language. That is, the way in which we are hailed or called forth into who we become by means of what Lacan calls the signifier, or maybe we could say language. Our parents during our young infant years helping to call us forth into who we become. They help us. We see our reflection in the mirror and they say, look, that's you. That's you. So we rely on who we become through the language, the pointing, the signification that comes from the big other of our lives. At that time, it's the parent. But in some sense, we are those things. We are that sound, Tyler, or artist, or him. And yet we aren't that sound. I am not reducible to that sound. I am also not even reducible to that image that I see out in front of myself in the mirror looking back at me. And I think, oh, that's me. So I come to identify with that which is outside of myself and bring that into myself. And that is my understanding of what would be the mirror stage and kind of but why does that connect to this inherent lack? Well, once we fall, the theory goes anyways, once we fall into that symbolic register, that for Lacan is basically the time that you become a subject, because now you're suddenly subjected to the register of the symbolic, which includes things like law and here's what's acceptable, here's what's not acceptable. To be a part of this family, to be a part of this society, we're about this. This behavior is fine. This behavior is not fine. Once we fall into that, we are cut off from this immediacy that we once had with the world, or feel that we had anyways. And that cut from that kind of immediacy is for Lacan what causes us to retroactively feel as though we've lost something incredibly precious to us, unfathomably precious. And so we'll spend basically the rest of our lives kind of in search of things that contain an echo of the thing we feel we have been wrenched away from. And that is why lack is, according to this mythology, Lacanian mythology, that all of that is why we are... Sorry about that. It's because of all of that that we are all in the same boat as lacking subjects. That lack is ontological. Okay, so also I wrote a short little essay a while back on Paul Tillich's notion of a similar thing, and the way he talks about it, there's a really great sermon that he gave called You Are Accepted, and he kind of gives psychoanalytic and philosophical interpretations of sin with a capital S and grace with a capital G. And he says in that that before sin is an act, it is first a state. And the way that I kind of interpret that is because this lack or this original sin is ontological, when we don't accept that, we tend to look to things in the world to be a kind of means to an end to shore up the gap in our subjectivity, which means that we will use, unfortunately, we'll often use and abuse other people because we feel hollow inside. And we misrecognize that that hollowness, that nothingness, that lack is what we all have to wrestle with as humans. That is my understanding, at least, of what these two different levels of lack is. It's actually right at the beginning of Mari Rudy's book that she talks about this in the introduction of Penis Envy, a few pages in. Two levels of bad feelings is the heading. And she says, along the way in this book that she's writing, she's like, I'll consider the emotional costs of traumatic familial histories. And she goes into her own, which is incredibly interesting and touching and inspiring. And she's just such an incredible writer. She says, one of my main aims is to illustrate the ways in which such histories, not merely mine, but more generally speaking, can linger long after they have in principle been transcended. Like social inequalities, they are a source of the kinds of bad feelings that are produced by environmental factors, by strenuous wounding or abrasive circumstances, more than by, or at least in conjunction with, purely psychological processes. So there she's talking about that first kind of level of lack, which is potentially contingent. It has to do with the idiosyncratic histories, but also the randomness of which we are thrown into our bodies too. Okay, then she says, that said, and here comes the distinction between ontological and context-specific modalities of lack. She says, I want to acknowledge that there are some bad feelings that may be intrinsic to the human condition, that is, ontological, existential in the sense of being unavoidable. As a matter of fact, although I find Lacan helpful for explaining socially generated bad feelings, I find him perhaps even more helpful for addressing bad feelings for which there is no cure. So I think I kind of covered that there is no cure for that ontological lack. Of course, some people would say there's something, and that's the God-shaped hole that God goes into. But even those who would claim that still desire things. So, and within Lacanian theory anyways, it's like you can't desire anything without there being something missing, because otherwise if you had everything, then you would never go searching for anything. Okay, so I'm getting kind of off topic, but she says that I find Lacan helpful for explaining socially generated bad feelings. I find him perhaps even more helpful for addressing bad feelings for which there is no cure. This is why the last two chapters of this book draw on Lacanian insights to discuss feelings such as melancholia and anxiety. I don't mean to imply that melancholia and anxiety can't be socially or intersubjectively produced, for frequently they are, as I'll demonstrate in the final chapters. Yet it may also be that an undertone of sadness and anxiety is an inescapable component of human life. Our cheerfulness-promoting society tries to deny this. God, ain't that the truth? But this only intensifies the difficulty of coping with moments of existential malaise. This is why, toward the end of this book, I'll propose that even though many of our feelings could be avoided by conjuring away the environmental factors that cause them, there are some bad feelings that we may just need to learn to live with. As Lacan explains, there is no sovereign good, meaning that there's no ultimate remedy for bad feelings that are existential, inseparable from what it means to be human. My aim in making this argument is not to augment despair. Rather, I believe that understanding the reasons that some bad feelings are unavoidable can make it easier to bear such feelings. When we can't name what's ailing us, we also can't address the problem. Looking the other way, dodging the issue, that rarely works as an effective coping mechanism for feeling bad. Okay. In contrast, admitting that certain types of bad feelings at times emerge in the lives of most of us creates an awareness of our common human vulnerability, with the consequence that we may be less likely to blame ourselves when such feelings overtake us, not to mention making us potentially more sympathetic to others who may also be experiencing them. So when we realize and are able to accept that there is sort of this lack at our core, we realize and that we sometimes get caught up in destructive ways of trying to cope with that, we realize that, oh, that's also what others who have maybe hurt me in the past, that's what was happening with them too. And so there can be deeper understanding. There can be forgiveness. There can be solidarity through that which we all have in common, which is the way in which we all lack, the way in which we all sort of don't fit in anywhere too, is another way of thinking of it. It's the way in which we kind of don't belong. But okay, we'll try to go deeper into some of this in the coming weeks, and thanks for listening, and I'll be posting more episodes as we go. Thanks.